Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Very nice Friday as we get ready to head to Indianapolis for our next game on the slate against the Colts.
To Indianapolis.
Yes.
We were there for the combine in February, and it's Indianapolis is a place that we go as often as we do to our AFC West brethren, and now we're going back again for the first time in the regular season in a couple of years.
Warmer. Yeah, a little bit warmer than the combine.
A little bit warmer, and actually warm enough to where would not surprise me if the roof at Lucas Oil Stadium is open on Sunday. And in fact, 2 years ago, when the Broncos played there, it was a Sunday night game in October, and the roof was open. It was about 52 degrees. Not cold, but not exactly warm. Certainly, in any other circumstance, they would have opened or they would have closed the roof. But with Peyton Manning coming in, right, they wanted to open it up. And I wonder if they're going to do the same thing on Sunday.
Well, we'll wait and see. But, you know, this game doesn't have the same luster that we kind of expected coming into the season.
It doesn't have the same luster because you figured the Colts would be 5-3 or 6-2 by now and in the Super Bowl conversation. Although they're squarely in the playoff conversation because of their the lack of quality in the AFC South, to say the least. 3-5 gets you a tie for first place. You know, no one's talking about the Colts as a Super Bowl contender right now. And in fact, all the storylines have been about mangled fake punt plays.
Oh,
you
yes.
know. Chuck Pagano being in the final season of his contract and what his future is, you know, the issues in terms of building the roster. Ryan Grigson, their general manager, according to some reports, on the hot seat. T.Y. Hilton didn't practice all week this week. Just everything but quality football. And also, and I haven't even mentioned, Andrew Luck leading the league in interceptions right now, even though he's only started 6 of the 8 games the Colts have played this year. Just
yeah.
A lot going on and very little of it good in Indianapolis.
We'll get to that, but I kind of wanted to start off with I guess some news developments. A very exciting day for the trade deadline. Kind of a odd thing to say for the NFL, but it came down to the wire that the Broncos were in conversations with the Browns for left tackle Joe Thomas, who has never had a season where he didn't make the Pro Bowl. He's a franchise player, and as you've noted, potential Hall of Famer, and the clock kept winding down, and nothing got done.
Nothing got done. Wasn't for a lack of trying, and certainly you have to give John Elway credit for looking to improve this team in every way possible. But then I think you also have to give John Elway credit for backing away at the end when the deal got to a point where it was more than he was willing to give up, than would have been prudent to give up. And you know, that's part of being bold and decisive as a general manager. It's not just trying to make those deals at the trading deadline, which are so rare. Of course,
right.
You know, the fact is the Broncos made a big deal at the deadline or the day before the deadline to get Vernon Davis. And it was their first deadline deal since 2011 when they sent Brandon Lloyd away for a draft pick. So it tells you how rare those deals are for the Broncos. But you know, he made the effort. You know, there were obviously a lot of conversations, a lot of back and forth between the Browns and the Broncos. Didn't come to fruition, but boy, oh boy, it was as close as all the reports you've read and heard indicated. It very nearly happened. This wasn't a pipe dream. It wasn't speculation. Joe Thomas was very nearly a Denver Bronco. Now, that being said, it didn't happen. The Broncos still have those draft picks that were talked about being traded, and they're going to go forward at left tackle the rest of the season with Ryan Harris and Tyler Palumbus. They're playing better. The platoon appears to have helped the production of that position. It's helped keep Harris fresh. Palumbus knows more about the offense. Obviously, he knows zone blocking from all his years in the league, but has gotten more cohesion with the guy next to him. Usually it's Evan Mathis. Sometimes it's Max Garcia. That's helped. I think also having Vernon Davis and now maybe some more two tight end sets are coming to this offense and that Broncos had used, I think that will help as well. So I think the Broncos will be okay in terms of their blocking scheme, but still they were trying to get better and they almost did find arguably the best left tackle in the game.
Grabbing Vernon Davis is still like a fairly big thing. I mean, he's not the hot commodity that he once was, but 10 years into his career in the last couple of years have kind of been a little bit downslope, but I think you can attribute that a lot to the 49ers' own downslope of itself has kind of gone into a quagmire of just a big mess between front office and coaching and then some personnel decisions where the roster kind of, you know, retired or what have you, and the talent just kind of dropped off a cliff.
Talent's dropped off. The offensive line has taken some personnel hits. That hasn't helped things, and obviously we know all about the quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick.
If you read the Wall Street Journal, Colin Kaepernick's just as good as Cam Newton. I don't know if you saw that article.
I did see that, and I don't agree
pretty
with that.
Silly.
And this is not to say that I think Colin Kaepernick is a bad quarterback. I simply think Cam Newton, in terms of being that mobile,
Cam Newton can't
dual
escape
threat.
All these memes. There's all these
Is there a better true dual threat quarterback? I mean, obviously guys like Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers, they can move and they can do things with their feet. Mm-hmm. But Cam Newton is not someone that you can compare to many quarterbacks in this league because his skill set and how he's used is so different.
Right.
And he does that very well. Colin Kaepernick has done that well in the past. He has struggled the last couple of years. I think he can still be a very good quarterback in this league.
Sure.
He needs a fresh start.
Yeah.
But that fresh start may well come in San Francisco if they end up blowing things up after the season.
Well, I think we can count on them getting a pretty good draft pick.
Yes, and that would put them in position to add a quarterback if they want to. But again, that's going to depend on what they do. Is Jim Tom Sula back? Is Trent Baalke even back? What does their football hierarchy look like in the off season? That's going to determine what happens with Cam Newton. If they go for a total overhaul, who knows? If they have a new coach, may come in and say, hey, I like Colin Kaepernick. I can work with him.
Okay.
Colin Kaepernick's best move right now is just to accept this, as frustrating as it can be, and keep his mouth shut and just wait and bide his time. Because there will be another day for Colin Kaepernick.
And with all that uncertainty, I'm sure Vernon Davis is enjoying a switch from team that's been struggling to a team that is undefeated.
Ecstatic.
Yes.
If you go and watch his press conference on DenverBroncos.com, just thrilled.
A dream come true.
To come to Denver, to play with Peyton Manning. He said he's always dreamed of playing with Peyton Manning.
I'm sure there are tons of people who would love to be in that on the roster with him.
I'm sure there are too, and you think of him being a guy who's been around a long time. This is his 10th year in the league, but 10th year in the league means that you were watching Peyton Manning when you were just a young pup in high school and college. So, you know, Peyton Manning starts his career in 1998, and Vernon Davis would have been 14
something
when he started playing as a pro. And Peyton goes to the Pro Bowl for the first time a year later. So even a guy like – it tells you how long Peyton Manning's been around, because even a guy like Vernon Davis, who's considered an older player in this league, still views Peyton Manning with a soupçon of awe that comes from growing up watching a guy that you admire.
Yeah. The common phrase that has surrounded the addition of Davis is – another weapon. That's another option. And he was kind of at the forefront of this athletic tight end recent resurgence. And does he kind of give them another Julius Thomas option down the seam, things like that in the red zone?
Down the seam, corner routes. I think it was Rick Dennison who said on Thursday at his press conference how much he likes seeing Vernon Davis run the corner route in practice. And you look at the Broncos offense, and we've talked about it on this podcast, the red zone. It's been a problem. They've missed Julius Thomas. Let's not mince words here. You know, Owen Daniels and Virgil Green, they've done some good things. They had their best games, I thought, as a collaborative.
For sure.
Against the Packers. But they haven't been able to make the kinds of plays in the red zone in particular and down the seam that Julius Thomas made.
Right.
They're just different guys with different skill sets. And Vernon Davis, even though he's the same age and experience level as Owen Daniels, I think he's probably a little more capable of doing some things on the inside in the red zone that Daniels hasn't quite been able to do. Maybe you get Vernon Davis going on the inside and then you get and get Daniels on routes that get him to the outside because he's still very good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can cause some problems for opposing defenses. You can go with two tight end sets that have as many weapons as a four as some teams' four wide receiver sets if you use Owen Daniels and Vernon Davis and play them off each other. And then Virgil Green made some plays last week. You can play him off Vernon Davis as well. I think this is going to open up a horizon of possibilities for the Broncos offense. And that's not even saying what the coverage that's given to Vernon Davis does for Demaryius Thomas on the outside. If the safety has to come up and worry about Davis and Thomas is getting more one-on-ones, and you saw last week what happened when Demaryius Thomas is getting those one-on-ones. It's going to make a lot of plays.
He ate.
He ate greedy in the parlance of Von Miller.
One of the things that I was talking to Scott about was he brought up how incredible it was how aggressive Elway is in kind of making these deals. And to be the kind of player, the quality of player that he was in his playing career, and then to be an exceptional general manager, I said it's an alternate universe Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan is not a very good manager.
Alternate universe Michael Jordan. That's a great comparison. And I'm just thinking.
Yeah, it's
on the positive side. The you know, we know about Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore, but I think the guy that I think of a lot with in comparison to John Elway is Steve Yzerman with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course, the interesting thing is, you know, he was a Red Wing as a player, so he goes down. He goes to another franchise, but very similar in how he will make some bold moves, but also will not make a move that he doesn't think is practical. So there's boldness, but there's shrewdness and pragmatism.
That is something that the Hornets have not done. That Lance Stephenson was bold, sure. But
bold leadership is not simply about just charging headlong like a buffalo.
Yeah.
It's about knowing when to pull back. It's like it's more like riding a horse. Appropriate. Broncos here, okay? Sometimes you got a thoroughbred and you're gonna crack the whip a little bit. You're gonna, you know, try to get more out of him. But then sometimes you gotta know when to pull up. And this week I think John Elway did very well. And we're not just saying this because of the Denver Broncos podcast. I'm speaking with complete intellectual honesty about covering football for a long time, that he was bold, but he knew when to pull back on the reins. We saw one on Monday. We saw an example being bold on Monday. We saw the example of pulling back on Tuesday. The team got better, but it didn't jeopardize its future. And where that Joe Thomas deal went, the parameters that were reported, that was starting to get to a damaging the future realm. Because think about it. If you trade for Joe Thomas, that's an expensive player under your salary cap. You're trying to sign other guys as well.
And Von Miller's coming up.
Right. Von Miller's coming up. We have expiring contracts for Malik Jackson and Dane Trevathan, for instance.
Derek Wolfe.
And boy, oh boy, when you see this defense on a week-to-week basis, you want to keep it together somehow, some way. And that means you're going to have to hang on to as many of those draft picks as possible, because you need those value guys. You're going to need those first contract players that are affordable and cost controlled under the salary cap to be able to have room for Von Miller if he ends up getting a massive contract that's $17 million a year. Demaryius Thomas at $14 million a year. You have to prioritize. Keep the elite guys, and that means letting some good players go. But when you're getting to free agency, you have to ask yourself, okay, who can I potentially replace with what's available on the market or what's available in the draft? A great example was Raheem Moore.
Right.
Would have been nice to have him back. The Broncos developed him. He was a starter for three of his four seasons with the team. But it wasn't practical to keep him. Broncos went out, got Darian Stewart, and no offense to Raheem the Dream, but they haven't missed him. because of Darian Stewart. And also, Bradley Roby's seeing some time at safety, too.
Yeah. And speaking of Vernon Davis, this week's matchup against the Colts will be his first time ever, apparently, playing against his brother, Vontae Davis. Not that they might see matchups against each other.
I want to see it once, you know, because Aqib Talib lined up against Jimmy Graham when Talib was a Patriot and Graham was a Saint. So why can't we see Vontae on Vernon just once? I've been waiting for this.
Too big. I think the drop off is a little too big. If you spend Vontae Davis to cover Vernon Davis,
one has a size advantage, one has a speed advantage,
and you have to find someone else to cover Demaryius or Emmanuel. I don't know, man.
I know. I know it's a problem. I don't think
we'll
see
him in on a tackle.
I want to see it from a narrative perspective. Okay, I'm viewing this, you know, with a literary mind here.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. There's definitely no love lost between these two teams.
No,
the Broncos. I mean, go back to the first game of last year. They jumped out early. The Colts nearly had a comeback bid. Came up just short late in the game. Broncos escaped with the win. They saw each other once more. Playoff game. Broncos were outplayed thoroughly. And the Colts escaped with the victory. Went on to get crushed in the AFC Championship game. But still, the Broncos came out of the game none too fond of the Colts. And I talked to Derek Wolfe on Monday, and he's like, I feel a certain type of way about them. I can tell you that way is not exactly... I love them.
You've heard revenge.
Yeah.
Spoken of by some guys. And then some like Von Miller are saying, look, different year, different circumstances, and you're not going to get total revenge for a playoff loss in the regular season.
Yeah.
I get
it
that.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but to say that that guys aren't thinking about that, that'd be crazy. And like you said, some guys are. Chris Harris wants revenge. For it, mm-hmm. he wants to even the scales just a little bit. I think also going to Indianapolis 2 years ago, when Peyton Manning was welcomed back and they had the tribute video on the scoreboards and it got all dusty and emotional inside of Lucas Oil Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I think looking back on that, the Broncos felt like that they kind of lost their edge a little bit in that game. You know, they
certainly have an edge now.
They started 6-0. They lost that night to Indianapolis. Didn't prevent them from having the top seed in the AFC and having a phenomenal season. But you know, they look back on that and they feel like they should have played better. And you know, got CJ Anderson, Chris Harris Jr., I think Brandon Marshall as well. They've all said they want to win it. They want to do well and win it for him.
Yeah,
I think Chris said it best when he said, "Look, Peyton's not going to say it to you guys, the media. He's not going to say it to us as players. But we all know he really wants this, and we want to do this for him." And obviously the storybook scenario is get the win,
mm-hmm.
which would give him the all-time wins record by starting quarterback.
Over Brett Favre.
Yes. Get the passing yardage record,
mm-hmm.
again over Brett Favre. Yep. And to do it in a place that everyone in Indiana knows is the house that Peyton built, because it was the success of the Colts in the early years with Peyton Manning at quarterback that really stoked the fire of Colts fandom in mm-hmm. Indiana and got the ball rolling to build what is one of the more magnificent stadiums, I think.
It's a great stadium.
In the NFL.
I love it. The architecture.
It
just fits.
It fits. It's that field house kind of architecture. It's mm-hmm. That stadium is perfect for Indiana. Very few stadiums I look at these days fit in their surroundings, in their city. That stadium is perfect for that town. It's the way they designed it, even like with the, you know, you've got all the light, the natural light that comes in through the windows mm-hmm. at each end. And of course, part of the design was to host the Final Four in the national championship game and put the floor at what is midfield
right.
for an NFL game. So you could cram 70,000 people in for a national championship game.
NCAA headquarters are there.
Right. You know, really, really reflecting Indiana's love for the great love for basketball. It's one of the better venues, and I think it's an underrated venue. I don't think enough people give it credit for being one of the best places to watch a football game. Mm-hmm. And while I'm not going to say any football stadium is a great place to watch a basketball game, there are many worse large dome type venues for basketball than Lucas Oil Stadium.
And I like the Pacers field house as well.
Oh, they're it's similar. Banker's Life now, right?
Yep.
I almost said Conseco or Conseco. Mm.
Jose Canseco Fieldhouse.
Yeah, it's that's a great venue as well. The old replaced the old Market Square Arena back in the day.
It's got a very distinct and fitting architecture to it as well. Kind of same, you know. It has huge windows on the ends of it. Lets some light in. It's very nice.
I'm a fan of Indianapolis.
I didn't like it when it was 20 below, but I like it.
I don't like any city when it's 20 below, but they have the skywalks there. I mean. Didn't we go to dinner most nights at the Combine and we had to step outside for maybe a block at the most?
That was still a tough block though.
Oh, I know. It'll knock the snot from your nostrils.
It'll freeze Yeah. That's what it does. It'll freeze it right inside your nose.
It's on those cold days, man.
You hope it snows because then it takes some of the moisture out of the air.
True.
Anyway, getting towards the game, we talked a little bit about the upheaval and in Indianapolis with the
didn't even mention the coordinators.
We did not.
So much. That's the thing, that so much has gone on in Indianapolis this year.
So much has gone wrong.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, right. They fired Pep Hamilton this week and replaced him with Rob Chudzinski, their assistant head coach. Now he's going to call the plays on offense. Former Browns head coach.
Yep.
Former Panthers offensive coordinator. Hey, we got two
Panthers.
Yeah, we're going to get castigated again for mentioning the Panthers twice on this podcast. We talked about them with Cam.
And Chud also coached with Wade.
Right, in San Diego.
There's some connections. I mean, Wade said, I don't know how much you can expect that offense to change on a short week after a Monday night game. But Wade said he sees some elements of Chud's offense from previous years. He sees some of it in their current offense, and he must have some kind of role as an associate head coach.
Yeah, and there'll be some wrinkles. I expect they're going to go up tempo a bit more on offense on Sunday. Maybe force the Broncos out of their substitution pattern a little bit. They will tweak some things, but
the Ravens changed their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, a few years ago.
Now
back in 2012,
yep.
The first game out, it was awful.
Yeah.
The Broncos went to Baltimore and slaughtered them. But then, as we know, unfortunately, Broncos fans remember this. By the time the playoffs came around, they had things going pretty well.
Yep.
So that's what they're hoping for. And it's interesting to look at teams making changes. Now, Detroit first made the coordinator and staff changes last week. And that felt very much, going to London, it felt very much like a last-ditch attempt to save their season. Now, with their administrative changes, they're looking ahead.
Yeah.
You know, you fire Tom Lewan, fire Martin Mayhew, and you get a sense they're looking beyond, even though they're trying to win right
Manny
now.
I feel bad for Manny Ramirez with that whole situation.
I do, too. Because
he's already gone through it.
Yeah. When he was here, he loved being in Denver because of how competently it was run compared to when he was in Detroit. Because he was in Detroit.
Like Detroit changed things.
He was in Detroit for 0-16.
Yeah.
So he was there when Matt Millen got fired. Matt Millen drafted him. Millen got fired and replaced by Martin Mayhew. And now, I'm not saying this just because I'm playing Monday morning quarterback here. When they fired Millen and they promoted from within, I remember sitting in Carolina at my desk at the Panthers at the time and thinking, what? You're going to promote from within after a failed era.
Yeah.
But that was kind of endemic of the manner in which that team was run. And I think it's going to be different. I think Martha Firestone Ford really wants to clean some house there. So anyway, you have the changes there. You have the Titans. Now, even though they're 1-6, they're 2 games back in the division.
Right.
You make the move to fire Ken Whisenhunt because you feel like it's as bad as your record is, it's still within reach. They lost some close games. Obviously, they've been without Marcus Mariota for 2 games, but if they had any semblance of offense, they would have been in it, at minimum, in it in Houston, and probably would have pulled off the upset over Atlanta at home.
Yeah.
And the other thing with Ken Whisenhunt, he had that 2-point conversion call in the game against the Colts, where you're at the 1-yard line after a penalty, a half the distance penalty, and you take the ball out of Marcus Mariota's hands. You've got a great young dual threat quarterback who should be deadly in a 2-point conversion situation, trying to tie the game, and you take the ball out of his hands. I cannot pound this desk enough
to win the game.
No, it's not just playing to win. It's just don't be stupid. Let your best player decide the game.
We'll put that up on a sign. Don't be stupid.
Don't be stupid.
Andrew Mason.
Coaches overthink things so often. I mean, I think back to 2011. They had Tim Tebow here, when it was time for a 2-point conversion, what did John Fox and Mike McCoy do? They kept the ball in Tim Tebow's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not saying that he was a great passer, but in that situation, he was lethal.
Yep.
In that at the goal line, a 2-point conversion situation. So if you're the Titans, you're the Adams family. Oh gosh. Different spelling.
Oh, okay. I was like, where did this? Oh. We just went somewhere.
If you're the I can't even say it now. If you're the family of the late Bud Adams, who's running the team right now, and will for the foreseeable future and a long time to come, you're thinking, okay, we're very close. We're 1-6, but we're not that far off. The division is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Changing coaches and going to someone who's had a bit more success, had some success, although Jacksonville was a disaster in 2012, Mike Mularkey, but you know, someone who had some success in Buffalo, maybe that'll help shake things up. And that's why you make that move. And the Colts, I think, they are in first place, but you look back at the Ravens in 2012, you're thinking, okay, maybe this can spark something. It couldn't hurt at this point.
Yeah.
Could the Colts offense with that talent be much worse than it has been? I don't think so.
I mean, what's kind of interesting, you know, listening to Pagano on the conference call, is that one of the things that, you know, that Andrew Luck is so well known for is comeback drives and things like that. That's something they want to put an end to because they don't want to have to leave it up to a comeback.
No.
And, I mean, while that's been like a kind of a defining part of who he is,
If they play better
in the first 3 quarters.
Not even the first. Shoot, they could start in the 3rd quarter against Carolina. If they put it together 1 or 2 series earlier, the Panthers aren't unbeaten.
Right.
Of course, that being said, some of that is on the Panthers.
Yeah.
They lost their aggressive edge on defense at the end. They did go prevent. And
I don't want
to. Maybe they need to learn that. Hopefully for them, they learn their lesson going forward.
I mean, maybe this is a little out there, but it reminded me of some of the comeback drives that we almost allowed last year.
You can say it. It's okay.
It's okay.
Not getting in trouble for that. I think a fair amount of the guys in the locker room will say the same thing.
Yeah.
The way they're not going to, some of them aren't going to, you know, rip the previous defensive administration per se, but they're a lot happier with the tenor of play calling now.
Yeah,
than before. That's also the mindset of a good defensive player. He wants the opportunity. He wants to push the envelope. He wants to force the offense to do something different than its initial plan.
Yeah, that's been the whole mindset of this defense since Wade's been here.
I was reading something not long ago about the origins of the 46 defense, and the initial design was. Okay, the initial point that Buddy Ryan had was, okay, I don't have a lot of great players, but how do I still generate pressure? And the first – and the reason – you know why it's called the 46? You know the story? Okay. Doug Plank was the Bears' safety, number 46. Later went on to be a successful coach in the Arena Football League. And what they did was they took the middle linebacker and they moved him closer to the line where he was almost over the center –
Okay.
And then they took the safety, Doug Plank, and they moved him up where the Mike linebacker was. And Buddy Ryan used to do everything by player numbers and all that, and Plank was 46, and they moved him in the middle, so that's why it was called the 46. Hmm. But the point being that aggression, when they really got aggressive, it changed the entire tenor of what they were doing. And they didn't necessarily have the personnel to do it, but they did it anyway. Eventually, they started adding the personnel. They had some good drafts. They bring in guys like Mike Singletary and Richard Dent, and everything started to click for that defense. But the first time they used the 46 was against San Diego, the height of the Air Coryell era. Mm-hmm. Pulled off a big upset at Soldier Field. The Chargers didn't know what was coming, didn't know where pressure was coming from. And that, you know, it discombobulated what at the time was by far the best offense in the game, and an offense that was probably two decades ahead of its time. And pressure messed it up. Now, fast forward to 2015. I'll take this Broncos personnel over the 1981 Bears personnel when they first started the 46. And you're getting pressure with that. It's going to mess. It's going to mess up everything. I think people need to stand back and appreciate just what this defense did to Aaron Rodgers on Sunday night.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to Wade for Q&A that'll be in game day in a couple weeks, and I said, you know, coming off this win, and you hold Aaron Rodgers to 77 passing yards. 50 if you count the sacks, and he's
50 passing yards, 50 net passing yards.
I say, so 50 passing yards if you count the sacks. And he goes, I count the sacks.
I count them. Well, I count them too.
I do count them.
That's why I don't like this. I don't like in the league stat pack they give you, you know, when they're measuring quarterbacks and measuring team passing games, you see yards per attempt. I don't give a happy crap about yards per attempt. I want yards per pass play. That's what I keep track of. When I do the power rankings on Tuesday, the passing stat I use is yards per pass play because I want to incorporate sacks. I would feel that way even if the Broncos weren't the best pass rushing defense in the league as it is right now.
When we talk about pressure, when we talk about Andrew Luck, who is having he's having the worst season of his career.
Painful season.
Yes. If the reports are true, he has fractured ribs. He's missed a couple games with a separated shoulder. He has 12 interceptions. That's a lot. That leads the league.
That's in six games.
Yes, so averaging a couple a game. He had three last game against the Panthers on Monday night. That includes overtime. So
he's forcing stuff.
He's forcing things.
And that, you know what, and sometimes great quarterbacks do that. Brett Favre had some outlandish interception seasons, in part because his blocking was breaking down in those years. Mm-hmm. He felt like he had to try to force the issue, get the ball out a little bit sooner before his receiver had separation.
And I'm looking at Luck's stats, his Pro Football Focus stats with passing under pressure. And it's kind of funny. When he is not blitzed, he's considerably worse than when he is blitzed. I mean, you have fewer plays when he's blitzed, but he's thrown 8 picks when he's not blitzed as opposed to 4 when he is.
Because sometimes what happens is if your offensive line concedes pressure, you start feeling pressure when it's not actually there. It's almost like you're feeling ghosts. It messes up the timing, and that leads to some of the bad throws. I think it's not that teams are pressuring him all the time, but you get the sense, you get the perception that you're feeling pressure. So.
And against this Broncos defense, that's not really a thing you want to do.
No.
And you won't really be feeling ghosts because before you feel the ghosts, you will feel the players themselves with how fast they play.
That's profound.
What you can do against Aaron Rodgers, I feel like he has a better feel for the pocket than Andrew Luck does.
I don't think Andrew Luck has a bad feel for the pocket.
No, he doesn't.
I think Aaron Rodgers is exceptional. I think Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All you Patriots Twitter people, now you can get on my case about that. Hashtag don't Patriots
on,
Twitter.
Don't get on my case. I won't say one thing or the other.
That's okay. I can take the slings and arrows. I'm a big boy. I can handle it.
But pressure is significantly affecting Andrew Luck, who has completed 36% of his passes under pressure PFF. Depending on how their receivers look, we know T.Y. Hilton's banged up. We know that their offensive line hasn't been particularly great.
But Andre Johnson and Kobe Fleener at tight end, and also Dante Moncrief, the young receiver, they can make plays as well. So if they don't have T.Y. Hilton, they still have some playmakers for which you have to account.
What might be dangerous is if they get one-dimensional, because their running game, while maybe a little bit better than it was last year, is still not significant.
It's not going to carry them.
Especially if they get down early.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think if they get the ball first, they're going to try to go up-tempo and try to get off to a fast start. If they get down 10-0, 14-0, even though they've had comebacks this season, it's against this defense. Sunday against Green Bay, you finally got the template of what the Broncos were looking for in a game. The offense gets out in front, and the defense, and then the opposing offense is in pass mode, and the defense just teed off. And you saw the pressure crank up and really crank up as the game went on. So, you know, the Colts are I'm sure going to try for a fast start, but if the Broncos get that early lead, I don't see the Colts having the ability to make a comeback the way they did against the Panthers, against the Saints, although those did fall short.
And we didn't even mention the secret weapon of the Broncos defense, Sylvester Williams dropping back in coverage.
A new wrinkle for the defense. And there were a lot of new wrinkles Sunday. I mean, you had now Bradley Roby starting in a base defense. That wasn't a new wrinkle. But having Bradley Roby be a third cornerback and only using one safety, so you had your base package with a single high safety and T.J. Ward and three cornerbacks, that was a new wrinkle that we hadn't really seen a lot of to this point. The, you know, Sly dropping into coverage, a little zone blitz action. That's something we hadn't seen.
I talked to him in the locker room. He said he's now part of the no-fly zone.
Yes, and we were talking about how the no-fly zone logo should now change. Someone who's a little more corpulent.
I told him, compared to a guy like Terrence Knighton, who's a little bit bigger, I was like, you know, maybe this is the advantage of being smaller, and you can kind of cover running backs. You're looking forward to that now, right? He kind of laughed. He was like, what do you mean smaller? I was like, I don't mean anything. Just in comparison to Terrence Knighton, many people are smaller. But a lot of new wrinkles. That's something we talked about hoping to see last year. There weren't that many wrinkles in the playoff game. I don't know how many more wrinkles Wade Phillips can start to unleash as the season goes on. But
I think he's got more.
Oh, man. It's tantalizing.
I think it's only scratching the surface, like Von Miller said. Mm. I think there's more to come. There could be some Sunday. But somehow I expect that the next wave of new wrinkles might be against the Patriots at the end of the month.
We'll just have to wait
and
see.
And then perhaps against the Bengals the following month. There's some potentially massive matchups on the horizon, but you got to get past this one first. I mean, hey, the Broncos aren't even at the halfway point of their season. They won't be there until Sunday night after the game, and we'll see where they are. Certainly they hope they come back from Indianapolis 8-0. And boy, you want to take it one game at a time, but it's kind of sad because every game is crucial. Every game could be lost.
But don't you wish that game were here? Now?
The build-up. You feel it already building. Of course, there have been other unbeaten versus unbeaten matchups that could have happened late in the season that got scuttled, and there's plenty of time for this one to get scuttled. So let's just keep it right there. But still, boy, oh boy. You look at the second half of the schedule, and you've got the Patriots, and you've got the Bengals, and you have some tough division games as well. It's going to be fun.
We talk about our defense, or I should say the Broncos defense. The Colts defense has not been doing so hot. Vontae Davis is a premier cornerback, but the rest of that defense has really been struggling. They've been 24th in pass yards per play given up. They don't muster many sacks. The rushing defense is in the middle.
They've invested in the edge rushing, but it hasn't really worked out like they'd hoped. You know.
I think age is catching up to some of the guys.
Age and a guy like Bjorn Werner hasn't really panned out mm-hmm. as you'd expect a first round guy off the edge to pan out at this point. I watch him on defense. They just and I hate to put it in simplistic terms like this, but they just look slow.
Mm-hmm.
And slow in coverage. I mean, Nate Irving, former Bronco.
He won't be playing.
Yeah, he won't be playing, but I've seen him get beat in coverage. Part of it is someone like Nate Irving was being asked to do stuff that he wasn't good at. Nate Irving is a good thumper against the run, mm-hmm. not the guy that you want in coverage. And they were asking him to do some coverage stuff, and he struggled. And so they're mixing and matching. They're really almost trying desperately to find something that works. I'm sure the Broncos hope they won't find it this week.
Yep. And with that, I think we'll wrap up this podcast. Come back next week after a trip to Indianapolis, and we'll get ready for the next game. And with that, we'll sign off. You can listen to the podcast on iTunes if you prefer that manner. And see you all in a week's time.